Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Tadashi Ono, who is a food and beverage consultant based in New York and a former executive chef at Matsuri in the Maritime Hotel in Meatpacking District. And he was also the executive chef of the legendary French restaurant La Calabelle in 1990s. And Tadashi is also the co-author of three cookbooks: Japanese Hot Pots, Comforting One-Pot Meals, The Japanese Grill, From Classic Yakitori to Steak, Seafood and Vegetables, and Japanese Soul Cooking, Ramen, Tonkatsu, Tempura, and more, from the street and kitchens of Tokyo and beyond. And today's topic is nabe, or Japanese hot pots, which Tadashi featured in one of his cookbooks. And if you have been to Japan, you know that nabe is a big part of Japanese food culture. So today we'll talk about what Japanese nabe is, regional variations of nabe, how to make great nabe dishes, and much, much more. But quickly before we start, Japanese is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher as podcasts. So please go to iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe to Japanese. And please write a review on iTunes and Stitcher. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know, and you can email us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org. And in fact, today's topic, Japanese hot pot, is suggested by one of our listeners. So thank you so much. And finally, our fellow show host at Heritage Radio, Michael Holland-Turkel of The Food Scene and Harry Rosenblum of Feast of Your Ears have been organizing sumo stew, and which is a unique viewing party for sumo tournaments. They came to our show and talked about it. It was really fun. And they have cultivated a big sumo fan base through multiple sumo stews over the last 2 years. And now the sumo stew new season is coming up soon. And the next sumo stew and the 15th sumo stew is now in Boston on Friday, May 19th, at Zone 3 in Boston. So for details, please visit sumostew.com, that is sumostew.com, sumostew.com. And for Japanese listeners, there is a discount code. Type in Kanpai 10, that is K-A-N-P-A-I plus number 10, Kanpai 10, code for you to offer a $10 discount. And yes, that's it for now, and let's have a conversation with Tadashi Ono. So hello, Tadashi. Welcome to Japanese.
Hi, Akiko. Thanks for having me.
So thank you for waiting for long
okay, yeah.
pre-show.
Yeah.
So you came to the show on episode number 5,
right,
and we had a great conversation about your culinary career.
Okay.
So listeners who have not listened to it, could you tell us a quick version of your background?
Okay. I've been cooking since 16 years old, after I dropped out from high school.
Okay.
And I started out with a Japanese chef in a Japanese restaurant in Tokyo, and I was in and out cooking for like 4 years in Japan. Then I came to LA to work for a Japanese restaurant. The restaurant supported me visa and everything. I was working there for like 5 years in LA as a Japanese chef.
Right.
Then after I started to have an interest in working in French cuisine, so I start to work in a restaurant called L'Orangerie in LA. It was a very good place.
Right, it's pretty legendary.
Yeah, it's not there anymore, but it was pretty good. I learned a lot about the nouvelle type of French cooking.
Mm.
Then the chef of the L'Orangerie had a friend in New York. They asked me if you want to go to New York. Then I came to New York. I started to work for a restaurant called La Caravelle as a line cook. And after 2 years working as a line cook and a sous chef, I became a executive chef in 1990. Yeah,
<That's>, that is great because and La Caravelle is really one of the most famous French restaurants. And
in
then,
the time,
right,
yes.
Unfortunately, it was closed after, you know, the 9/11
40 years, yeah,
right,
of the business, yes.
So, and you, when you were there as an executive chef, you earned 3 stars from the New York Times twice.
Right.
That was the time nobody would have believed that a Japanese person could cook fine dining French, French
yeah,
food.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy that I tried to do. But, yeah, I thought I could do something different and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And also, La Caravelle is very classical French restaurant.
Mm.
So there's like two different kind of things going on. Like one side is classic, one side is kind of innovative.
Mm.
In a way. So that drew a lot of attention. Then, you know, luckily we could get a you know, good review in all these media.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was good 5 years I did work for, and I learned a lot about the French cooking, French culture, people, and, you know, but I could also explore some of the Japanese side of it. So that was fun part of what I was doing in the restaurant.
Interesting, so. Because you originally started to train in Japanese restaurants and you came to L.A.
Right.
And I'm sure you are curious about French style, Western
Yeah, Western cooking. Style of cooking was, you know, I wasn't aware of anything and I didn't know about much. So I naturally, I living in this country, I start to have a, you know, I start to want to learn more about Western style of cooking. So,
Okay. And it turned out to be very classical style of French cooking.
Yes. So. Yeah. That was a good fundamental technique and knowledge that I could learn from the restaurant.
Mm. Yeah. And then since 2003, when you joined the Matsuri at the Maritime Hotel in Meatpacking, which is always super busy and huge, beautiful restaurant.
Yeah, it has a 300 seat.
Right. So why Japanese cooking at that point?
Well, I'm Japanese. I mean, I grew up in Japan.
Right.
And I love Japanese food. And I was, you know, thinking that the things that I know that I can introduce to audience here in America, you know, not only sushi or tempura, just, you know, other kind of Japanese style of cooking. So I could, you know, meaningful for me to do something, you know, Japanese fundamental cooking.
Right.
To the world.
I think 2003, that's already people started to be really seeing sushi as part of American diet.
Yes,
and
yes.
They're curious more about the next level, serious Japanese style cooking.
Yeah, luckily the restaurant landed for almost 10 years. And we had a good reputation and the business was pretty good too.
Right.
Yep.
So I still remember that. You know, I used to go there very often.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're the best customer of ours. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I had a great time. So I really noticed that you are based on traditional culinary style. And you threw in some Western elements. But yeah.
Very little, yeah.
Right. Mm. So now let's just a nice segue to today's topic. It's nabe. So,
okay.
So I would assume, you know, nabe is quintessential Japanese cuisine, and you wrote a book about it.
Yes.
Right. So what's the importance for you to, you know, having nabe in your life?
Oh, it's very important. I mean, it's very basic or fundamental cooking for me, especially when I'm home, you know, having fun with people, you know, like family, friends, eating from one pot, sharing, that makes, you know, us or the people around more closer in a way. So it's very, very good way to entertain people and, you know, enjoying. And also it's very healthy. It's a wholesome one pot meal. In the one pot, you have all kinds of ingredients, right? And all kinds of nutrition. So it's very enjoyable. Yeah.
Okay, so are we going to go into the details in a moment?
Right.
But so how do you define nabe?
Just to start. Again, it's fun, easy, healthy, wholesome one pot meal.
Right.
Yeah.
So as far as it's in one pot,
right,
then it's basically it's poached in broth.
Right.
And everything is poached in broth, and then it's a combination of different kinds, any kinds of ingredients. That's
yes, another. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Mm. Yeah. The nabe in Japanese, you can mean it's a actual pot.
Right.
But nabe, we refer to as a cooking.
Yes, recipe. It's like that, just nabe. Everybody knows what is nabe is, right?
And
right?
So many like memories and flashing
exactly
to your face.
So I'm sure each family or, you know, each people has a memory of, you know, grew up with eating nabe.
Right.
Right, so that's, everybody has a story about it.
Yeah, like right, behind all those teams, you see friend's face, parents' face.
Yeah, get drunk, you know, eating too much. That's what I do all the time. But
right. Well, that's a celebration of life.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so, but do you know the history of nabe?
I'm not a historian of the cooking, but I think the nabe started out since the ceramic pot was created.
Okay.
In Jomon period, which is like 15,000 years ago, right? So it's basically cooking the pot, right? So that then it's more like, you know, became like today in Edo period, maybe like 400 to, you know, 200 years ago. So it become more, you know, regional, you know, people has a specialize in the kind of pot they do, you know, and seasonal.
Right.
So yeah, I think then today it's more variety, also regional, seasonal, that doesn't have changed. But today all kinds of innovative hot pot too in Tokyo, which is using tomato or bacon. you know it's very, it's changing, it's always changing and you know, progressing and evolving.
I was looking at them. In even the Edo period, there is a nabe cookbook.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you were saying hundreds of recipe already in Edo period. Yeah, it's it's amazing. Yeah.
And the other thing is that in 19th century, in Meiji period, when people started to eat beef.
Yes.
There's a beef nabe, which I heard it became the in food that you have to eat.
Oh, I love beef nabe. Yeah. Oh, sukiyaki is the one of most famous, you know, nabe using beef.
Right.
But there's a beef nabe called
gyu nabe, right,
which means beef hot pot, right? Beef, which uses a miso base.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they started. I think it happens in Yokohama area, which is Yokohama is the biggest, one of the biggest port in Japan. And that's the place that all these Westerners came in.
First
to
time
Japan,
after 20
first
years.
Time. Yeah, so that, you know, beef cooking was happening in that area first.
Then. Right. And also in 1969, there's a portable gas burner that was invented.
Right.
And that triggered a whole popularity of Japanese nabe.
Yeah, I think that makes hot pot cooking in the home bigger because it's portable, casual, easy to use. So every, you know, household can have this, you know, cartridge gas burner.
Right. Well, actually, let's talk about it because I think it's really essential and it's available in this country too.
Oh, yeah.
So it's called, in Japan, they say cassette konro. I don't know where the name came from.
Cassette,
but,
like just stick it in, right? Right. So then it's a very, you know, it's a burner.
Right.
You can put it on the tabletop.
It's actually really light and easy to clean, and then you get
very easy, very light, very, you know, very you know, casual, easy to use. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if you go to like Mitsuba or Japanese grocery stores,
even in like a regular market, they start to carry those now.
Right. You know,
like what, the bed and bath type of place? Mm. I'm sure they do have those things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, $30-$35.
Yeah, not even sometimes.
Right.
In Japanese market.
And you can have canisters, the gas.
Yes, right. Exactly. It's changeable.
Mm.
And, you know, it runs out after two times of
another
cooking. Then, right. You know.
And it's pretty strong. It's really boiled.
It gets hot. Yeah, it does get hot.
Mm. So that's the cassette conlo or the portable tabletop gas burner.
Yes.
That's essential.
That's essential, yeah.
Right. Mm. Okay. And in the last conversation on episode 5, you said something very interesting. Mm. So you say, we don't say let's make nabe. We say let's do nabe.
Aye.
Nabe ni shio.
Yes. So, nabe ni suru. Tonight?
Yeah, let's do nabe.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's like, you know, nabe is more like enjoying fun. You know, everybody contribute to cook on the table.
Right, because you're surrounding one nabe.
Yeah, one nabe with, you know, for as many as people you can, but just to stick in the all these ingredients into nabe. So, okay, everybody has a part sometimes, like, oh, you do protein, you do vegetable, you do starch, right?
Right.
I take care of sauce, right? Kind of stuff, and broth.
Mm.
So it's like gathering, doing it together, and, you know, try to have fun with it. And also, sometimes there's the part, the name, the nabe, you know, there's a, I don't know how to explain, but, you know, you can call these people, like, he's a nabe shogun, which means nabe dictator, right? So he dictates everything, you know, okay, you put this now, and you put this now, you know, kind of stuff. So that's nabe dictator.
Right.
And there's a nabe judge, too. Like, oh, this nabe is so good, right? So nabe daikan or nabe bugyo.
Right, right.
So,
right. Yeah, and judge, I heard there's a nabe musume, or the machi musume. Machi means wait, and then just waiting, and just to eat the best part without doing anything.
I'm a nabe shogun home.
Oh, yeah. So, you're a dictator.
Yeah, dictator. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, really have to. Somebody has to see the heat level,
right,
and order what to put.
Yeah, I mean, you know, since I'm a chef, so
right.
I think I know what to do more than anybody at home.
Right.
Right. So just,
but you instruct,
right,
and then people follow.
Sometimes don't.
So that you do everything myself.
It's like my wife goes, nah, that's too early to put it in. Don't put it in now. Okay. She knows. So
right.
I think she's the nabe empress.
Okay.
I'm a just shogun, so. Yeah.
So she's the strong first lady.
Exactly.
Right. So the nature of nabe is very collaborative. Communal, and you participate,
right?
And hopefully you don't argue and fight over.
It happens sometimes. That's a fun part of it, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Mm. And so I was reading through your book, according to your excellent nabe Japanese hot pots, comforting one pot meals. There are 5 main components of nabe.
Right.
And these are number one, broth.
Right.
And 2, foundation ingredients,
right,
and main ingredients,
right,
and natural flavorings, and garnishes. So it's interesting. I never thought of this categorization.
Right.
But can we just go through this?
Okay. Well, the first one is broth.
Broth.
So basically, there's a clear broth or flavor broth. Clear broth is like water-based. And then flavor broth is a dashi.
Right.
Or the bonito flake stock or kombu stock.
Mm.
That's flavor. And also more saucy type of broth, which uses for like a sukiyaki type of thing. So it's that's the broth, right?
Right.
And foundation ingredients is more...
So let me just go back. So the clear water means what you're cooking ingredients, you naturally at the same time make kind of stock. So that becomes...
Yes, exactly.
You're making, cooking...
All the flavor and nutrition of the ingredients goes into the broth.
Mm.
So we talk about it later, but broth become extremely flavorful at the end of the nabe cooking.
Right.
So that's a good part of it.
So, yeah. Right. And the flavored stock, you said dashi, and also you can add some soy sauce or miso to make it more flavored.
That's the natural flavoring on the fourth one that you just mentioned.
Right. Okay.
And the next one is foundation of ingredient. It's a basic thing that we have to have. Well, we better have, you know, like ones like tofu, right? And vegetables.
Right.
And protein. And starch.
Right.
And vegetables, we normally use something seasonal. So whatever you get in the market, you can put it in the autumn. There's mushroom, beautiful mushroom happening. And also in the winter, there's like Napa cabbage or, you know, Japanese thick scallion, almost like a leek type of thing.
Right.
That's very essential.
Right, like that's, Tokyo negi,
yes.
Tokyo scallion.
Exactly. And the third one is main ingredients. Right,
but, you know, these are the foundational ingredients. Because you have to fill a big pot.
Right.
So the foundational ingredients add not just flavors and, of course, the nutrition, like vegetables.
Exactly.
And so, volume as
Yes, volume. So that's why you have protein, you have, you know, vegetables, starch, and other kind of, you know, source of the nutrition that gives a balance, good balance of this hot pot cooking.
Right.
So, yeah.
I really like Napa cabbage because it has a volume, but it shrinks.
Yes.
And then it's light.
Yes.
And
it also sucks the flavor very well. So it gets extremely tasty.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you say, the mushrooms, they kind of a source of umami.
Exactly. It gives a flavor to the broth. So it's mushroom is very essential.
Right. And absorb back the other flavors too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Right. And I think it's the foundational ingredients are very important because if it's not enough, you start fighting for ingredients and main ingredients.
You know, we have to have enough ingredients for people you have.
Right.
That's for sure. Well, it's, you know, all kinds of, you know, variety and balance of ingredients.
Right. Right, but, you know, we're going to talk about the main ingredients, but, you know, you can't have only chicken or, like, protein.
No, it has to have a balance.
Right.
And, again, it's a wholesome, you know, one pot cook meal. So you have to cover all the ingredients, all the nutrition you can think of.
Right.
So, yeah.
So foundational ingredients is really foundational to make it, like,
to make,
nutritiously and also for the taste.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
So what kind of main ingredients to put on top of foundational?
Well, it could be fish, shellfish, chicken, pork, beef, vegetables. I mean, also like tofu type of thing or fried tofu for vegetarian choices. So a mushroom type. So it's just the protein is the main ingredients normally for me.
Right.
At least.
Well, it can be any kind of, depending on, say, you feel like something in the middle of the winter, heavier, can be beef.
Yes, yes, exactly. And also, again, we talk about it later, but the flavoring is also, could be seasonal. In summer, you don't want to eat something heavy, right? So you make it into more lighter broth. So just easier for us. For you to eat.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and it's good that, like you said, it can be vegetarian or...
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think if you have a couple different kinds of friends with different diets, you have one pot, and at the beginning you cook something only for vegetarian, and set it aside, you can add some meat later.
True. Right? Yeah, yeah. So. That's good. That's smart.
Yeah, just like maintain good friendship, right?
Right, okay. Exactly, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, then I think one of the foundational ingredients, that's noodles.
True.
Right.
Yeah.
And it can be a main ingredient as well.
Yes, that's the thing. We use noodles, starch, rice at the end of the meal. In the hot pot, we throw into the hot pot called shime.
Right.
So that fills you up even more. And then also you get the, the starch, the ingredients or nutrition you need at the end.
Right. And also so that's the best part of the stock.
It's the best part. And it absorbs all the flavor from the, all the nutrition or ingredients, gives a flavor into the broth, and you absorb it. It's a great thing to finish the meal.
Right.
And also you don't want to start with the starch because it fills you up.
Mm.
So you won't be able to eat much.
Right.
So after that, so it's always at the end.
That is so right. And also I think different kinds of noodles that can, it's not a starch, but for instance, harusame
or
shirataki, oita konnyaku, they are very common. And harusame basically the thin kuya noodles
made
from... It's a
potato starch noodle.
Right. Yeah, mung bean or potato.
Mung bean, yes.
And shirataki or ito konnyaku, that's thin. And that's basically made from konnyaku, which is a kind of type
root
of root.
Vegetable, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's very low in calories and it's very healthy.
Right.
And cleanse your...
And great texture. It's very springy.
Right.
Type. Yeah, I love those things.
Right.
Yeah.
And I tend to put it in the middle of the cooking because...
That's okay. Yeah, but it's just... It's not that as heavy as all this, starchy noodle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, And also it's a good texture to chew in.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
It's a good stuff to just
eat.
Yeah.
So starchy noodles tend to be at the end, but the harusame or shirataki or ito konnyaku, those things you can put in the middle.
Yes, yes.
Like it vegetables.
Depends, yes.
Right. Okay. And so the main ingredients you said it can be anything. So what kind of flavorings do you use?
Well, it could be salt base also or soy sauce.
Mm.
With a dashi and a mirin type of thing, which gives a very, very flavorful broth.
Mm, sweeter and a little kind of like hefty, more viscous texture, maybe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right.
And miso gives more thick, flavor. Right.
And some grainy sometimes.
Yes. And also... There's in the region they use kind of fish sauce called shotsuru, which made from a kind of not anchovy exactly. It's a between anchovy and sardine type of thing. It's hata hata is the name of the fish. They make like fish sauce out of it. It happens in Akita Prefecture in Japan,
right.
And also there's a like fish sauce made out of squid called ishiri. It's from Ishikawa
Kanazawa,
Prefecture,
right.
Noto, Noto Peninsula. that's very good flavoring too. So you can use those in natural flavoring.
So fish sauce, that's a little secret.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Right. And yeah, and of course the miso has huge variation depending on which region and what kind of things you like so that you can play with it.
Oh, yeah, all kinds. Tons of, yeah.
And so then what kind of garnishes do you use?
Well, there's always essential is kind of spice, right? With I love things called yuzu kosho, which has a yuzu is Japanese citrus.
Right.
Then this has the skin... And juice is mushed into the pepper,
right, chili pepper
puree.
Right.
Yes, so and then age it a little bit, so it's got a little umami and also and very it has a salt, a good amount of salt too, so it's a little salty, but it's very spicy.
Right, so it's
everything.
Called the yuzu kosho. It's fiery and tangy because of the yuzu citrus.
Yes, yes,
and the salty. Yes, so. Yes. Just a little
it's
bit.
Very spicy, but it's also very refreshing, and I love these things. And also like chopped scallion, you can put it in when you eat it, and grated daikon is a grated radish. You make it in, it's like a puree, but it's grated, so it has a texture. And also enzyme in the daikon helps you digesting.
Right.
So it's great to have when you have a protein, so it digests better.
Right, so those garnishes tend to be that, everybody surrounding nabe has a little ball,
Yes.
Or like dipping sauce cup,
yes.
Right? So these are, say, daikon roshi that's refreshing, just freshly grated spicy
right.
daikon.
Yes.
And it digests, it's kind of digestive enzyme helps you to...
Yes, and also gives a flavor, another dimension of the flavor, so it's just... makes nabe more enjoyable.
Right. And yep. I really like the, you know, the daikon oroshi, like grated daikon has a chili pepper that's called tomomiji oroshi.
Right.
Right. Like a red, beautiful color. Like a maple.
Yeah, I like doing daikon oroshi and yuzu kosho mixed together. So, yeah.
Wow.
Especially for clear broth, shabu shabu type of nabe. And ponzu dipping sauce with a grated daikon with yuzu kosho.
Right.
With the shabu shabu, that's one of my favorite.
Okay, yeah, ponzu basically is the citrusy and savory, sweet and tart,
right?
Kind of a juice.
Yeah,
it's a blend of lemon, orange, lime, or whatever.
Like yuzu, you could be yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yep.
So the takeaway here is that you can have the kind different kinds of broth and ingredients. Also, the way you serve can be straight out of. The pot, and then you have a bigger cup,
right.
Or you can have dipping sauce.
Right.
It can be anything.
Well, the three different kind of the broth, right? Mainly, the wine's clear, which is no flavor, unflavor. The wine's like dashi base flavor.
Right.
And wine's saucy. So, dipping sauce normally use it for first one. Water base,
right?
Nabe. So just boiling a kind of clear water and just dip into this sauce,
right?
So that's what we use it with it for,
like right?
Especially ponzu is a great,
right?
Great so sauce for dipping,
the balancing
dipping style, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So the lightness and the flavor,
right.
It's a balance,
yes,
okay. And so do you have any rules in combining those elements, like? You know, any rules?
Well, nabe is very casual, you know, fun eating. Of course, you don't want to boil like a hell to cook, overcook things.
Right.
You want to avoid that.
Mm.
But you don't want to just do so much what to do
right.
with nabe cooking. It's just, you know, you can have fun with it. Just put everything, you know, you want to, right?
Right. And if you fail, you can add something back.
Yeah. Well, for instance, I had a friend came over. I start to, you know, I did nabe, right? So start with clear broth, unflavored, and with a dipping ponzu sauce, right? You start to cook oyster, right? In a clear broth and dip it with dipping sauce. Okay, now we do pork. Shabu shabu. So we do thin sliced pork belly into the same pot and just, you know, cook slightly cook and dip into the ponzu sauce.
Right.
The second. Then you start to get tired of it. You put in the broth, you put soy sauce and mirin. So the broth has a flavor with oyster and pork now.
Wow.
So then you put, you know, clam, you know, the fish, then make it into like seafood hot pot, right? Okay, so when we cooking, then the broth cooked down a little bit. It gets thick. Okay, now we put the beef right at the end.
So
and maybe you can add a little bit of a miso inside. And we finish with a beef sukiyaki type of thing with a miso flavor.
Oh, my God.
So, right? It's like all night you can go. You know, it's like a 5 hour dinner. You know?
Right. that's a really good way to see it.
Yeah.
Right. It's like evolves over dinner.
Yeah, exactly. So you can just, you know, have fun with it, you know.
And, okay, and creative. And that's a part of this whole.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so now let's take a quick break here. And then when you come back, we'll talk about the cookware. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Tadashi Ono, who is the culinary director of the culinary beverage consultant based in New York and the co-author of Japanese Hot Pots, Comforting One-Pot Meals. So what kind of cookware do you use to make a nabe dish?
I have a Japanese ceramic, like, cookware, like pot, it's like with a beautiful lid. It's coming from Iga area, which is very famous for the clay.
Right.
They have this hot pot, the clay has a little bubble in the body of the clay.
Okay.
When you make it. So this bubble keeps heat for a long time. So once you eat, boiling, right? That to turn on and boil. If you turn it off the heat, like 5 minutes, it's still boiling.
Right.
Yeah, it keeps heat really well and very even.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
I use that mainly, but I don't want to use it all the time because it's kind of hard to handle sometimes. I'm worried about dropping and breaking it. It's so beautiful. So I use this cruze type of, you know, cast iron hot pot nowadays. It's kind of easy.
Right.
So, yeah. So it could be anything, you know.
That's another versatile element of
nabe. Yeah, it's great. It works perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think the Japanese clay pot that you use from Iga, that's called donabe, and it evenly conducts heat across a pot.
Right.
And then clay retains temperature better than any other cookware material.
It keeps heat really well.
Right. Yeah. And donabe is shaped like a one bottom. Like yours,
right?
And like a doomed lid, so
yes,
it's efficiently circulate the heat,
steam,
right?
Yeah, inside, yeah.
So and of course, but you can use any Western style cast iron cookware.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just curious. You know, another great thing about the nabe is that there's so many regional variations. What kind of examples do you?
Well, it's, you know, everywhere you go in Japan, all the different kind of nabe there is. And, you know, I travel in Japan north to south, and I tried all the different kinds of nabe. Yeah, and then one from Hokkaido, which is very north island of Japan, and they have Ishikari nabe, which is using salmon. And Hokkaido has a big production of the milk, you know, like dairy product. So they have butter milk, so you can put little milk and butter and mix with miso.
Wow.
And Hokkaido is known for potato, onion, and cabbage. These ingredients are very not familiar for nabe.
Right.
But you can put it into the nabe, which is makes gorgeous hot pot.
Right.
Ishikari. Salmon hot pot. And also I tried nabe from Kyushu, which is south island of Japan, and the fish called ara. It's a big, it's gigantic grouper, but that fish was phenomenal. It's so good. And we had a shabu shabu, and we had a shabu shabu, which is like a little, you know, lightly cooking the broth, hop, then then you eat with a dipping sauce, which is like ponzu. Mm. That nabe was outstanding.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of nabe, but, you know.
Right. Interesting. So, you know, actually, if you, our listeners, go to go to Japan and visit somebody's house or restaurant, they basically have the same dishes, right? Depending on which region. So you can just go to a local restaurant and try to have that thing. People may be cooking at home as well.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Yeah. So it's really a great way to see.
Well, if you want to know more about regional hot pot, just buy my hot pot cooking book.
You have 50 ingredients.
50 different kind of hot pot cooking.
Right. Nabe. Well, that's actually that's Japanese hot pots, comforting one pot meals from 10 Speed Press.
Yes.
And published in 2009. And you can buy it on Amazon or any regular bookstore.
It's pretty reasonable.
Right. Yeah. And I really, for, I own the book. And then you for this show, to be honest with you, I read through and I was so into it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Right. So I really have to think of that five elements when I feel good thinking about
it. Yes. Right. Yes. Oh, thank you.
And right. So the... You know, we talked about the rules to make nabe. You can be nabe shogun, but you shouldn't be machimusume, like waiting for whatever. You know, if you go to, you can cook any nabe at home, but do you have any suggestions at the restaurants, like, you know, any New York City restaurants?
Had a very good hot pot in a restaurant called Omen in New York City, in Soho, on Thompson Street. They made a salmon shabu shabu, which is again the thin sliced salmon, just slightly cooked in the water based broth and eating with a very good dipping sauce, which based in a ponzu type of thing, but they use very special Japanese citrus. I forgot the name of it, but that was very good. And using salmon is, you know, salmon you get everywhere, right?
Right.
And I don't, you know, it doesn't sound so special. But eating this way, like shabu shabu type of thing, was mind blowing.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So I really enjoyed that.
Right. That really shows that you can do anything with nabe.
Right.
So if you're in New York or if you're in London or if you're in Thailand, you could have local version of.
Another restaurant called Hakata Tonton, which is a pork. They specialize in pork intestine.
Right.
I don't know, some people might not like it, but I love this stuff. So
that's super healthy.
Super healthy. A lot of collagen. It's good for your skin, especially for ladies. So, yeah, that place is pretty good too. Yeah, it's a village. Yeah.
Right. And if you have any trouble finding restaurants, you can always get that cassette conro and then.
Exactly. So, difference between hot pot cooking in restaurant and home. Restaurant, you order what it is. You can arrange it to it, right?
Right.
If you do it home, you can be creative or free or, you know.
Right.
You can do anything you want to. Mm-hmm. So that, you know.
Right. And again, I really think that, you know, one of the reasons that nabe is so popular in Japan, it's such a collaborative activity.
Yes, exactly.
And it's beyond just eating.
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
It's communication.
Let's do nabe, right?
Right.
That's
the thing,
yeah.
Nabe party.
Exactly. I love it.
I still remember when I was in Japan, I just meet friends. That's the best way to catch up. So anyway, so... So where can we find your latest projects and activities?
I'm working on this Japanese company in Japan, doing consulting for bringing or opening restaurant in the food court of the building.
Okay.
So I'm just, you know, suggesting or, you know, like advising them what kind of old restaurant it should be. And one could be New York style.
Right.
Novelta type of thing would be great. You know, then one could be Japanese, one could be, you know, Chinese, Italian. So, yeah, that's mainly I'm doing that. So I'm back and forth to Tokyo nowadays.
Oh, wow.
And we're also planning to open Japanese very high-end steakhouse in New York.
Wow.
So that's, we're just looking for the space right now, and that's exciting.
Right.
They use best Japanese beef you can get.
And maybe you can come back and talk about it.
Yeah, I would love to. And also, you know what I really want to do in New York? I want to open Nabe restaurant.
Mm.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes, that's what I have to do.
I'm working on that. Well, we didn't specifically talk about it, but the Nabe is so healthy.
It is. Healthy, enjoyable, fun. You know, it's just, it's best thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's physically healthy, and through the communication you have.
Yes.
The stress.
Yes.
Right. Talk over a Nabe with friends and family.
Right.
Right. That's the solution for the modern life.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so do you have an email address that people have suggestions for Japanese projects or...
Email address?
Yeah, that people can contact you.
onotadashi@aol.
Okay.
onotadashi@aol. I'm still using AOL.
You got mail. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but well, people never forget.
Right.
Okay, so onotadashi@aol.com.
Yes.
Okay, so so good luck with all the projects, and please come back for other, hopefully, the Nabe restaurant.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Oh, thank you so much.
Right. Okay, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org, and you can also reach me at akikotema.com. And Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes and Stitcher podcasts. And our engineer today is David Tadashiore, and I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.